We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps, as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching out to us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent.
Many people have seen ghosts and reported incredible experiences from the realm of the spirit world. Who can tell what this young man will see as he falls deep into a trance?
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio, May 2nd, 2014. Here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. And what a show we have got tonight. An exclusive, a first-time ever guest here on the Dark Matter Radio Network. We're going to be joined by Matty Beckerman. Actually, apparently he was just on the show. He literally was just on Jimmy's show. And he's coming on again. We just cannot get enough. It is Matty Beckerman night here on the program. And in fact, and my producer, Garrett, put this together, and apparently we've got a special Facebook page for the hosts, and unfortunately my producer is not part of that Facebook page. So what we're going to do in the future is make sure that that we get him up there, but not a big deal today because I got a lot of questions that I want to ask Matty Beckerman about his new film Alien Abduction, which in fact is playing in the background right now. As we speak, it is on my Apple TV. I went up to the Apple Store, went up to iTunes, I guess it would be, and I rented the movie. Been watching it here. It's playing here in the background. It'll be playing throughout the show. And if you want to check it out, same deal. It's all over the place. You need Amazon Prime. If you've got an Apple TV, you can check it out on iTunes. Obviously, any pads or anything like that. We'll talk to him about that as well. And the whole story of the Brown Mountain Lights, which is essentially the background, it is the basis of this particular film. So if you were listening earlier to Jimmy's show, and maybe there was some stuff that you had questions for Matty that you didn't get a chance to ask, now's your chance to ask him. He's coming back on in about 20 minutes, and we're going to ask all of your questions. How can you communicate with the show? Well, we may open up the phone lines. We shall see how things go. I'm going to be taking open line calls here in just a moment. But we may take phone calls for sure. If you would like to contact us on Twitter, the best way to do it is to follow me at Brian Alvarez. And you can tweet to myself at Brian Alvarez. And of course, our hashtag is DM Radio Net. I'm going to be following that hashtag all night long. So if you are on Twitter and you'd like to ask a question for Matty Beckerman, you're welcome to do so using the hashtag DM Radio Net or by contacting me at Brian Alvarez. I'll be following this all night. So again, if you have any questions for Matty Beckerman, that is the place to do it. Now we're going to start taking phone calls here in just a moment. If you want all of the phone numbers and everything, they're up at afterdarkradioshow.com. The number is 855-478-4478. That is 855-478-4478. If you need the phone number, if you need the Twitter handle, if you need any of that, you can get it at afterdarkradioshow.com. Without further ado, let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Hector from Brownsville, Texas.
Hector, what's up?
Hey, I have a guest suggestion for you. The living legend, Larry Zbyszko. This guy is all into paranormal conspiracy theories. He will be great for the show.
You know, if you go to the Wrestling Observer site, you can Google, he's probably doing it on Google as well, but I've interviewed Larry, and we talked all about this stuff. I didn't even ask him, I think I asked him a couple of questions about wrestling, But I largely asked him about the paranormal. You should go up there and check that one out.
No, I did check it out. That's why I figured we need to get this guy on a bigger show and let him just go off on that kind of stuff.
I see. You want a part two. You want a part
definitely.
Two. All right. Well, producer Garrett's listening right now. I'll try and have him set up a return appearance by Larry Zbysko. He can talk about anything.
Anything. It would be great to listen. I'm sure a lot of guys, old wrestlers, would just love to talk about this stuff. Maybe even some old road stories. I'm sure they've been through so much stuff and seen so many weird things in their travel that I think we can easily, you know, synergize here and tie in your business on the side with this this show here.
Well, maybe we'll do that. All right, I want to thank you very much for the call. Larry Zbysko is on the request list. All right, to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
It's Dave from Wisconsin.
What's up, Dave?
I got two things, but the first one's real quick. Since I know you love Bigfoot and whatnot, Les Shroud, the guy from Survivor Man, is now like basically hunting for Bigfoot.
Yes, he is.
So I thought you might like to check that out.
Have you seen the show yet?
I'm actually watching it right now on mute.
I mean, where are you watching it?
Oh, I'm watching on the Science Channel.
On the Science Channel. So it is playing in the U.S. now.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. The last time that I saw the update, it hadn't debuted in the U.S. yet. But how is it?
Yeah, I think they have a couple episodes out.
I heard it was really good, and he had some very intriguing evidence.
Yeah. No, he seems to be pretty well grounded in it, and it's not like, you know, the Finding Bigfoot or that Spike TV show.
Yeah. The impression I got from reading the article was that he went into this, I guess, skeptical. Or at least having an open mind, and when the whole thing was done, he was, I don't want to say he was convinced, but he did not discount it at all, and he saw some stuff that he found to be very interesting. How far have you got into it so far?
I've seen a couple things. The one that I mostly focused on was the one where he was in Lance's neck of the woods, where he was in Alberta, and he found like some sort of structure that he said was like probably about 30 years old that was like probably not man-made, and it's like all these trees that are creating to like kind of a teepee structure if you look at it, but it's like some of the trees are like inverted where the bottom of the tree is actually upwards in the structure, so it's kind of weird.
Very interesting. Well, I'll check it out on the Science Channel. What else is on your mind?
The other thing I was thinking about, like, since you have your guest who has his like alien abduction thing, I was kind of thinking, because I was also earlier tonight watching like Ancient Aliens on History 2 or whatever. And, like, I was just thinking, like, a lot of the times, you know, they talk about how, like, there's been so many ancient aliens, you know, however long in the past, but there weren't, like, any actual, like, UFO crashes that were, like, recorded. All of them were just kind of, like, appropriate landings. And then so I was kind of thinking, like, as far as the human, like, technological advances, when it comes to things like, I don't know, say radar, like, we really didn't have any incidents like Roswell prior to the 20th century, from what I can gather. So something tells me. I believe in extraterrestrial life, and the fact that I think there's, I kind of find it unfathomable that there's not something else out there than, you know, human life form, be it hundreds of light years out there or millions or whatever else. I don't necessarily know if they've visited, but it just kind of seems a little strange to me that now we have all these incidents within the 20th century, but we have all these supposed contact stories prior to that, but no actual, like, alleged crashes. So that's just what I was thinking about.
All right. I'll make sure to ask him. I want to thank you very much for the call. In fact, maybe crash is not the right word, but there are pre-Roswell, I don't even know what the best term would be, mechanical failures in UFO history. There's a very famous story from the Middle Ages of supposedly a UFO of some sort was, I guess, flying over a church or something. I don't remember all the details, but essentially it had like an anchor that got caught, allegedly, on, I guess, the giant cross or whatever on the top of this church. And so it was stuck. And so they had to send a little guy down to, I guess, cut the rope or get the undo the anchor or whatever. I think he cut the rope and then climbed back up, because supposedly the anchor that got caught on the roof of the church is in the church supposedly today. I know that in the late 1800s, when they had the airship flap, allegedly there was a guy that came upon one of the airships that had landed, and the guys were working on it. and they were explaining that there was something that needed to be fixed or whatever. So there were mechanical failures, but it is interesting that in the post-1947, and I guess right around that period, because there were probably some slightly before Roswell, but a lot of crashes. And I'm not sure why. I've always wondered why, if you've got the capacity to travel interstellar space, the first thing you do when you get here, half the time it seems, is crash. Seems rather interesting. But I will ask him that tonight. Back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from? I don't trust that call. All right, let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Nope, you're not on the air. Phone lines are open. 855-478-4478 is the phone number. We'll take your open line phone calls for about the next 10, 15 minutes, and then we will get Maddie Beckerman here on the line. Again, if you were listening to Jimmy's show earlier in the evening, you heard 2 hours with Maddie. You may have questions for him following the interview, and so now is your chance. At Brian Alvarez or DM Radio Net. Hashtag DM Radio Net. So send your questions to me, and I will ask a bunch of them here on the program this evening. You can also follow me on Twitter at Brian Alvarez. Best way to contact me pretty much at any point. All right. I wanted to read an article here. This is this relates to our guest today, and it has to do with alien abductions. Have you been abducted by an alien? Or do you believe that you have been abducted by an alien? If so, there is a support group for you. This from The Telegraph in the UK. Come into contact with an alien? If so, you are not alone. A support group is holding a conference where you can share your experience with other abductees. The conference will feature an array of speakers who claim to have been in contact with extraterrestrials. It is being held by the Anomalous Mind Management Abductee Contactee Helpline. It is run by Joanne Summerscales, who believes it is important for people with such experiences to have people to talk to who will not mock them. The aim is to provide a safe platform for them to tell their stories without ridicule or fear. She has been contacted by 1,500 people in the last 3 years who claim they have been in contact with aliens. It's going to be a conference held in Hastings at the end of May. So, hey, if you want to get involved, check that out in The Telegraph. Back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Is you beat a name?
Alrighty. I got that one quick. Don't make me go through this thing and block more numbers. I don't appreciate that. You can always check us out, afterdarkradioshow.com. That is the website. Got a lot of interesting news articles to get into here today. As noted, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Maddie Beckerman, who's going to be talking to us about alien abductions. I don't know if you have seen the video of the alleged UFO over London, which is, it's actually been in a number of different places, a rotating UFO. It's been reported in various places. There is a video, and actually a series of photos as well. And if you look at these series of photos, it's very clear that whatever this is, it is real. Now, I'm not saying that that means that it is an alien craft, but I'll just read this. This is from unexplained-mysteries.com, which you can check out if you head to our website, afterdarkradioshow.com. A London resident managed to take several photographs of a strange, dark-colored object over the capital. The images were taken in the early afternoon of April 28th, show a peculiar circular dome-shaped craft spinning in the air. The witness claims that the object changed colors as it rotated and flew off after about 5 minutes towards the Highbury and Islington area. Photographs have generated a great deal of interest since appearing online, with internet users debating over what the object could be. And there is a Facebook post here, and this person that posted about it on Facebook has included a good dozen photos here. And it appears from looking at the photos that he did photograph something. I don't know what it is. I guess the argument by many would be that perhaps it is, I don't know, some sort of drone. A lot of different explanations here. from various people, including this person who believes it is a shark, like a flying shark operated by a remote control, which does, in fact, look somewhat like what this person has filmed. If you want to see these pictures, head to AfterDarkRadioShow.com. And if you scroll down in the news, there it is. Rotating UFO photographed over London. This was April 28th, 2014. It is a very interesting sort of object there. Are you aware of the Brown Mountain Lights? If you've been listening earlier in the evening when Maddie Beckerman was on, you probably are aware of what the Brown Mountain Lights are. Might be something to Google over the next 10 minutes because we're going to be talking about it here on the program. For years and years, people have seen strange lights in the area, dating back actually over 100 years. What are these lights? We're going to talk about that on the program later. Let's try the phones again. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
My old potty.
All right. Looks like the phone lines are shut off for the time being. All right, we've got, what else do we have here in terms of alien talk? Do I have any other alien articles here today? I do not believe that I do, although we are going to talk later on in the evening about the Loch Ness Monster. You might want to check this out right now before we talk about it later on. A mystery object picked up on Loch Ness sonar. You can check this out, unexplained-mysteries.com. I'm going to talk about this a little bit later on. A couple of weeks ago, we had the story about the whatever it was in the lock that was picked up by the, I guess it was the Apple satellite. This was not Google Maps. This was Apple Maps. And there was a very strange picture that was snapped of the lock. And it appeared to be some sort of swimming creature. We talked about it here on the program, and what a lot of people concluded was that it was a boat wake. And there was a lot of people have tried to enhance the photo to show where the boat was. And granted, from looking at it, the actual photo itself on Apple Maps doesn't really, you can't really see the boat. I'm always somewhat skeptical of photographs that are, quote, enhanced to show what people want to see or claim to see there. Enhancement can be both a positive and a negative. It can be a positive if you're doing an enhancement and you actually do pick up something that perhaps you had not seen before. But it can also be a negative if you do an enhancement. And unfortunately, in doing the enhancement, you bring out some detail that perhaps is not really there, if that makes sense. So perhaps it was, as people suspected, a boat wake. But it is interesting that I think it was earlier this year, there was an article that came out about the Loch Ness Monster. And I believe the article was noting that there had been no Loch Ness Monster sightings in all of 2013. And it had been like the first time in I don't even know how many years, that there had not been a Loch Ness Monster sighting in the lock. And so the conclusion was, well, if there really is something in the lock, well, it probably died. And if there was not anything in the lock, perhaps we have now reached the point where the story, the legend, the myth of the Loch Ness Monster has I guess, gone the way of the dodo. But now, just a few months after the whole story of the Loch Ness Monster no longer being sighted in the lock, now all of a sudden we've got all of these photographs, these sonar readings. It's actually it's pretty impressive. So we'll talk about that here in a little while. But as noted, we've got a big interview coming up right now. It is Maddie Beckerman night here on the program. We're going to get him on the air here. We're going to talk about his program and his movie, which, of course, is Alien Abduction. It is available on a number of different platforms, including Amazon Prime. If you've got an Apple TV, you can head up to iTunes and check it out there. So that's what we're going to be talking about here in just a moment. Maddie Beckerman, if you want to head up and check it out, you can do so. And as noted, I've got it playing here in the background, a very Blair Witch style production here. So we're going to talk to him about that. It should be a fun time. So stick around, everybody. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, and we will be joined by Maddie Beckerman talking alien abduction here on After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Radio Network. Here on After Dark Radio, Brian Alvarez here, Dark Matter Radio. We've got so much stuff to talk about with Maddie Beckerman here today. It is Maddie Beckerman Day on the program. Maddie, how you doing?
Terrific. Thank you so much for having me.
You were on the Dark Matter Radio Network 2 hours ago.
I was.
It's
for
your
2 hours.
That's right, for 2 hours. We've got the big comeback here. Now, obviously, we've got a lot of new listeners, and so we're going to talk a little bit about the same material that we talked about or that you talked about earlier with Jimmy. But I'm also opening up the Twitter here for questions for you, and we'll talk about some other topics as well. So, and I'm also going to give you an opportunity. If there was anything you didn't get a chance to talk about with Jimmy, now's your chance. Second option here on this program here tonight. So I've got the movie playing here in the background, actually. Your movie, of course, Alien Abduction, which is available all over the place. You can head to alienabductionfilm.com. And, of course, various different options of watching it. I'm watching it on my Apple TV right now, went up to iTunes. And tell us a little bit about this movie. Where did you get the idea to create Alien Abduction?
Well, my family have been living in the mountains of North Carolina since the 1970s, and I'd always heard the legend of the Brown Mountain Lights, which is a very real phenomenon where people have seen these lights in the skies over western North Carolina for over 800 years. It dates back to the Cherokee and the Catawba Indians, and it is freaky. And I personally have seen the lights myself. I've witnessed them. I've taken pictures of them. And it's real.
You know, the thing about the photographs that you're talking about, I haven't seen your particular photographs, but I know that there are a lot of people that they don't even believe that there are lights there. And obviously, they've never even been there to look. But sometimes when you hear people talking about the Brown Mountain lights, they'll say, there are no lights. There's nothing here. I mean, the fact is there are lights here. This is a fact. Now, what they are is open to speculation, but you personally have seen them. You've taken photographs of them.
Yes. And, you know, every agency that's gone out there to investigate them come up empty. And each scientist that kind of gives an explanation, they change their explanation depending on what field of research they're in. And it's swamp gas to some scientists. There's no swamp in the area. It's ball lightning to some scientists. Well, ball lightning doesn't move around trees and then chase people for miles.
I had read the story of, I don't remember the fella's name, but he claimed to have touched the Brown Mountain lights. And he said that like a shock went through his body. And
yeah.
So I thought, okay, you know what? Maybe that was ball lightning. But you're telling me that this is, these people are being followed by these lights.
Yeah. And what happened in that incident was far from normal. This guy, it was in the 1980s, and he was there with about 10 other people. And Joshua P. Warren actually interviewed just about everybody that was there with him. He has since passed away. But what happened was this whole group went up to the overlook, and there are signs on the side of the highway that clearly mark where to go and look for the Brown Mountain lights. That's how prevalent they are. So this whole group go up there, and they're about to leave, having not seen anything. And just then, two giant orbs show up right over the parking lot. One comes down just about 3 feet off the ground, and everyone goes running, except for one guy who gets out of his car and walks right up to it. Everyone's screaming at him, "No, no, no, come back!" And, you know, kind of right out of Fire in the Sky. And he decides to stick his hand into this orb. And there's two stories. So there's his recollection of what happened, and then the group of people that were there with him. From his story, it was 4 or 5 seconds, and he felt like he stuck his hand in an electrical socket. And then the people that were with him said that it lasted for, you know, between 5 and 10 minutes of him standing there like completely stiff.
And nobody did anything?
They were terrified. It's like watching a car crash or something. You know, at some point, you don't want to get in the midst of it. But, you know, no one did do anything. And he felt like he was being shocked. He only thought it was a few moments. And that's what makes me think that these lights, there's something about time with them that's altering normality.
Now, there is if you Google, you can see the sign, the Brown Mountain Light sign. Is that sign still there? It says long, even crescent mountain. The distance is Brown Mountain. From early times,
yeah.
People have observed weird, wavering lights arrive above this mountain and then dwindle and fade away. That's still there?
That is still there. That's at a place called Wiseman's View. And that's where my wife and I went with a friend of ours who had trained as a shaman with the Caro Indians in Peru. And when we went, we full-on saw the lights. And we took pictures of them. And if you head to my website, alienabductionfilm.com, you could see the pictures that we took there and the amazing amount of activity that we captured around us and right next to us. Beams of light and orbs, like, shooting out of us.
Now, how often do the lights appear? I mean, if I were near the Brown Mountains, let's say I had a week-long vacation out there, and I was going to go out there every single night, what are the chances that at some point I would see them?
I can't say, because there are people that have lived there their whole life and have not seen them. And they go up there all the time. They don't see them. And then there are people who see them regularly. So it's tough to say. I don't know. I saw them one time, and then, you know, I wasn't prepared really to document other than my iPhone. And then I brought a whole crew with me, cameras and all, night vision and everything, and my DP who had done, you know, some major films, and nothing.
So this was for the actual film. You were hoping you could get them for the movie.
You know, I was just hoping that we could, you know, capture something for maybe the documentary and some behind the scenes stuff.
Sure.
It just happened to work out that when I brought my real crew there, I didn't see anything.
Now, how often have you gone out to look? I mean, how many times in your lifetime have you been out there?
We went about 4 or 5 times while we were shooting. But we actually shot the full feature right there where the real lights are seen. And the crazy part is while we were up there, I just started interviewing local people and experts. And that made it into the opening of the film. So those are all real interviews with people.
Yeah, you got Joshua P. Warren is there at the beginning of the movie. And yeah. And he's written a pamphlet. I actually read his pamphlet. He's got a PDF. You can Google it. It talks all about the Brown Mountain lights.
Very familiar.
Yeah, and he's very he's very open-minded. I mean, he's not out there saying, you know, these are aliens. He gives you all of the possible scientific explanations, and he talks about some people believe that these could be alien craft or something from another dimension. He's very open about it.
He scientifically has studied it. He took a whole team from National Geographic with scientists and equipment and everything there to try to really pinpoint what it was. And like many other people, you know, it's still unexplained. He could not.
Now, what did he conclude? I mean, did he remain sort of just open-minded, or did he kind of believe that at the end of the day, probably some sort of natural phenomenon?
No, he's definitely heard all the stories from everybody. He did conclude that it was some kind of plasma-based electromagnetism. Now that could occur, that doesn't really occur naturally in the environment. Because when people talk about UFOs, they talk about electromagnetic interference. And that's something he discovered there. So he is definitely open-minded to what the possibilities are. I mean, every different scientist that comes up there and studies it gives you a different conclusion.
Now, let's backtrack a little bit for those listening that maybe aren't near a computer. Tell everybody where the Brown Mountains are located and what exactly people claim to see.
So it's in western North Carolina on the Tennessee border. And the closest town is called Morganton. And the lights are, you know, pretty large orbs and have been seen for centuries. And so have the claims of people being abducted there, the creature sightings that happened there. And I initially went in very skeptical of what people were saying about the Brown Mountain lights. And after interviewing police officers, school teachers, people who really didn't even want to end up on camera, I became a big believer.
Now, some of the people that didn't even want to appear on camera, they just wanted to tell you their story. Give us an example of the stories that they told you that they were comfortable telling you, but they didn't want their name out there. They didn't want their fate. They wanted no publicity. What stories did they tell you?
So I actually sat down with a sheriff up there, and he told me a story of getting a call about a disturbance, driving up to the Overlook and seeing a massive orb there. The orb then chased him down the highway over his car, like almost right on top of it, for many, many miles. And he was trying to outrun it. It was right with him. What happened next was pretty crazy. He woke up almost 18 hours later on the side of the road, and it was daylight.
So
he had no idea what happened to him.
A classic Missing Time episode.
Classic Missing Time. And I recorded this interview with him. And at the end of the interview, he said to me, "You know what, Matty, I can't go forward with this." And he wouldn't sign the documents that would allow me to use the clearance on it.
So he had originally agreed that he was going to tell this. Okay, and so afterwards, once he told the story, he was just like, I can't.
I understood completely. He was going to face ridicule, and he thought he could potentially lose his job.
Now, when you interviewed him, did you get the impression that you were the first person that he'd really told the entire story to?
You know, he may have told it to his wife, but he certainly did not share it with anyone in his police department or feel comfortable doing that. And the whole process shook him. I could see he was visibly upset about it. And that's just one story out of, like, many, many, many stories up there of people in the same predicament.
And did you speak to actual abductees?
I did. That's how I first got interested in this, was I was working up there with my family, and one of the guys that worked with us was a nice, really nice guy. He was a little crazy. Told me the story about how he'd been abducted after seeing the lights. I really didn't believe him initially. I thought he was just a little nutty. And, then I started hearing other stories. That's what drew me towards it. That's what drew me to make this movie, Alien Abduction, was initially hearing this first story and then following up with people.
So at the end of the day, did you believe his story, or did you still think, okay, this guy's kind of nutty, but there's so many other people telling me this story that I believe something happened?
Oh, I believe now.
I didn't believe
him at first, and I'm totally on the other side of it now.
What was his story? What happened to him?
I feel bad I ever doubted him. He was walking along a bank, and he was out fishing, and saw a light across the other side of the riverbank. And he claims that he was abducted, taken aboard a ship, experimented on, and they downloaded information to him. He then spent, I mean, this was 10, 15 years ago. He then spent all of his spare time drawing what he considered were spacecraft and where he had been, like elaborate drawings of it.
So he remembered all the details of the abduction? Or was this like
all the pieces of it?
Okay, so this wasn't like he had missing time or whatever. He underwent hypnosis. He remembered.
He's the only person that didn't have to be regressed.
Okay,
and I don't think any of these people had, but he actually remembered pieces of it. And whether it was hard to believe. It was so outlandish. And what he also was talking about was they had given him designs for aerospace. He was trying to draw like these airplanes. And he believed it so much that it kind of took you in.
You know, it's funny that a lot of abductees have that same deal where they come back and they've just got this great desire. They've got this machine, or they've got this technology that they've allegedly been told about, and they're just determined to make this thing real. And they never actually do. I mean, maybe they do, and we just, that's where we got fiber optics or whatever. But, in general, you hear these stories, and for some reason, they just have this, something happened where they were shown some technology, and they're just determined to recreate it. So that's not like his story is something that I've heard from others. And I don't know what it is. I don't know what it's about. I don't know.
Yeah, he would sit there and draw, like, these amazing airplane designs, and elaborate. Very, very detailed. But the nicest guy ever. I actually tried to interview him. I went to go sit down with him, and he said yes, yes, yes at first. And then the day comes, I'm supposed to go interview him, and he won't answer my calls, and he won't meet with me. I got my whole crew standing by. And he finally calls me 2 days later after me. I was harassing the guy. I feel bad about it. Because it's like, we got the whole crew. We're spending money. Where are you? Finally, he calls me practically in tears. He's like, my wife will not let me talk to you.
Wife putting the foot down.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't blame the guy either. I was like, I totally understand. But then I had plenty of other people who would step forward and tell me these stories. So, but these are people who, you know, do not want the publicity from it. This has affected them. This has scared them. And actually, in this one guy's case, and I won't mention his name, he had a positive experience from it. He enjoyed what he had taken away from it. So, you know, these aerospace designs that he had come up with was something precious to him.
Now, I don't know if you'd even have thought of this or if anybody would have thought of this, but did anyone bring these drawings to, like, somebody from Boeing, perhaps, and just say, would this thing fly?
You know what? That's such a fascinating thing to think about. I mean, everyone thought he was crazy, so I don't think they did.
Well, that's the reason I ask, is because sometimes when you hear about these abductees and they have this supposed technology or this supposed machine and they're intent on building it, you know, people will look at the design or whatever they're trying to create and just go, this will never work. And
yeah.
And it always appears these abductees are given this task or they have this desire to build a machine that just won't work. But, you know, I guess they're missing one.
What if it does? Maybe our technology is just so far back.
Well, I mean, that's what it could be. I mean, they're missing one very important thing that we don't have here on Earth. I don't know.
No.
But I hear the fantastical design for the aircraft, and it just makes, I know I have friends at Boeing, and I'd like to show it to them and just go, what do you think about this thing right here? Is this, would this thing fly? Literally.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many different stories of the Brown Mountain Lights, of people being abducted throughout the years, and most of them do not recall what happened to them. Most of them have lost time, and it's rare to have somebody that actually remembered what happened.
Now, the classic UFO abduction of being taken up into the craft, being shown something, information downloaded. I mean, this is all a pretty recent phenomenon, but you can go back in history, and what we would today call abductions has happened forever. Now,
yes.
When you talk about the stories of the Brown Mountain Lights dating back your 800 years, I mean, were these strictly sightings? Were there creatures reported? Were there abductions reported?
Yeah, so they don't call it abductions back then, but the Cherokee legend says that the lights are the maidens of Native Americans who are out looking for their men who disappeared. And, you know, there was supposed to be a large group of Cherokee who went missing there. And then the legend starts with a folk song, a very famous bluegrass song from the 1940s.
That's right.
Called the Brown Mountain Lights. And most famously done by Roy Orbison, but it's an old folk song. And it talks about a plantation owner who is hunting, and he goes missing. And then his workers go out looking for them, and they go missing as well. And the lights are supposedly the lanterns of the workers who are out looking for the man. And then you go into a little bit more modern times, I think around the 1950s, where a woman was accused of killing her husband. Around Brown Mountain, and the lights were seen, and she swore she didn't. A whole search party went out looking for this dead husband, apparently, and a bunch of the search party people also went missing. So this is something, like a theme that kind of repeats throughout history, large groups of people going missing on Brown Mountain.
Now, the U.S. Geological Survey did an investigation, a few of them, if I recall correctly, or maybe it was a few different, maybe it was U.S. Geological Survey and some other offices, but essentially they believe that these were misidentified trains, train lights, automobiles, brush fire. And then I guess there was a period during this study where there had been a flood, all the power was wiped out, and during this time where there was no power, there were still lights.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of
they pinpointed it on the CSX railway, And that's what they said were causing the lights. And during that time period, exactly like you said, big flood, the railway was washed out, and the lights were there.
Do you believe from talking to people that at least some of the reports are in fact natural phenomenon?
It's possible. I mean, who knows? I mean, nobody can explain it. So it very well could be a natural phenomenon. But, you know, tie that to creature sightings and tie that to abduction stories, and I think it's pretty compelling that there's something more going on there.
Well, the creature sightings are next. What creatures have people seen?
Well, there was a gentleman named Ralph Lale who owned a local gem shop. He would sell geodes and things he would find up in the Brown Mountain area. And Ralph Lale would pack a lunch, and he would then go walk off into the woods, and he would disappear for weeks at a time. I'm not talking like 2 weeks, like 3 or 4 weeks. And what he claimed was that he had gone and visited another planet with his extraterrestrial friends who would pick him up and take him in the mothership, and they would leave the planet. Now, Ralph was a kind of a kooky guy, and the next thing he claimed was even more amazing, which was that he had actually been given the body, the small, very small body of an extraterrestrial.
That's right. I've seen this photo.
Yeah, so Joshua P. Warren has this photo up on his site of this alien.
Now this guy passed away, right? And the alien has since never been seen.
Yeah, so
it's missing.
Apparently they bulldozed his place, and nobody knows who they is, by the way. Someone came in, bulldozed the property, and no one knows where this alien is.
I hope they got the alien out before they bulldozed the place.
I mean, why would they do that?
Now, the whole area, I guess, aside from creatures, I mean, people have reported helicopters, correct? And strange supposed military, sort of military exercises?
Yeah, lots of military exercises. So there's a restaurant in Morganton, which is the town closest to Brown Mountain, where an Army colonel walked in and asked the two owners, said, could you supply 400 meals a day for 2 months? And they said, of course. And they would show up with these two giant trucks filled with food, and they saw two MPs at a gate right at Brown Mountain, and they would drop the food off, and they would never see another soldier. And they did this for 2 months, 400 meals a day for 2 months.
But they would never see any other soldiers?
No, they did not see another soldier other than the colonel that came in and the two MPs.
So I guess that would lead us to suspect that the rumors, perhaps, would be true that maybe there are underground bases. Is that also spoken?
Yeah, that's another huge thing there. I've been told by people who have tried to study the Brown Mountain lights, anybody that goes there with any technological equipment that is capable of detecting, like electromagnetics or infrared, that strange SUVs show up taking pictures of them, and it's sort of an intimidation tactic. And I've heard this from multiple people. And actually, that same restaurant story that I'm telling you, I heard from straight out of the mouth of the head of the Burke County, which is the North Carolina area, director down there. And he told me the same thing about the military activity.
Now, you live in Beverly Hills, correct?
I do, yeah.
Is there anything out on that coast? Obviously, I think a lot of people have heard of the Marfa lights. Is there anything out in your neck of the woods that would be in any way similar to the Brown Mountain Lights?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, of course, the Skinwalker Ranch.
Yes.
Which I was on the show earlier. They had one of the people was actually there at the ranch tonight, talking about the lights and things that are seen there. These are occurrences. These lights that occur all over the world, from Hestelen to Min Min in Australia. Hestelen is in Norway. There's a place in China that this happens. There's a place in Lebanon that this happens. This is not an occurrence that's just, you know, random. It happens, and it happens for centuries.
Have you got a chance to investigate any of these other locales?
I have not, but I've looked at just the basic research that other people have done. I haven't gone in myself to try to capture a bunch of it. But I think, you know, if we're going to continue making another one of these films, it would be good to start gathering the information, gathering the research on these other locations, especially Hestelen in Norway. I think that one's the most fascinating one to me.
Well, tell us about that one.
Also, for hundreds of years, people have seen these massive lights, and it's been well documented. And it's in a very remote area. And the Norwegians are, I think, less prone to discuss alien abduction, but there's a correlation. I'd like to go in there and start interviewing local people and see if the abduction stories come out in the same way they have around Brown Mountain.
You're listening to the After Dark Radio Show, Dark Matter Radio Network. My name is Brian Alvarez. We are joined right now by Maddie Beckerman, who is the man behind Alien Abduction, which you can check out at alienabductionfilm.com. The movie is available on iTunes, Amazon Instant Video, Google Play, Xbox Video, Sony Entertainment Network. I'm sure a number of other online avenues, plus a bunch of theaters as well, all over the country. You can check those out at alienabductionfilm.com. You mentioned that going into this, you were skeptical of the whole story, just these lights, these abductions, everything like that. When did you first hear about the lights, and what led you from hearing the story and being skeptical to making a film about them?
Well, I'd heard the stories growing up. My grandparents had always told me it. It's one of those, like, you know, sitting around the campfire, hear about the Brown Mountain lights. You know, it's like almost up there in that region, it becomes just a part of the folklore.
Sure.
And I had, I never really believed it, but it was a fun story. And then when I heard the abduction stories from different people, that's when I said, oh man, there's something bigger going on here. And, you know, initially I wrote a movie just as a fun kind of entertainment-based thing. But as we made this film, as I interviewed local people, and then as I witnessed the light for myself, it completely changed my perspective on it. I said, my God, I've actually experienced this now. I see what other people have seen, and it wasn't just a fairy tale. It wasn't just a fantasy. This was now life imitating art, imitating life. It was, like, freaky.
Now, the film itself, I don't know, it is Blair Witch-esque, I guess would be the best way to put it.
It's a found footage film, exactly.
Found footage film, thank you. Now, was there a reason that you decided to make a found footage film as opposed to just a straight documentary?
Yes. I had met a psychologist who was working with this autistic child, like an 11-year-old kid. And the 11-year-old kid stopped speaking, and he kind of regressed back into a non-communicative state. And the doctor gave him a flip camera, just as an experiment. And this kid suddenly, I don't know what it was. I think it was just the fact that as an autistic person, maybe you're overwhelmed, or he was overwhelmed with too much information, too much data flowing in. And that camera allowed him to focus just on that screen and kind of block everything else out. And by doing that, he started then communicating and speaking again. But he used it as a safety blanket, as his crutch. And that's why I did this film, was because I wanted it to be from the perspective of this 11-year-old kid. And if you're talking about found footage, in a movie like Cloverfield, or I think I would drop that camera in about 10 seconds should I see Godzilla coming towards me.
Yes.
You know, so this made it have a vehicle to say, this is why he's holding on to this camera, and it makes it so much more realistic. And you feel that this kid would hold this camera. You're like, yes, of course he would.
You know, we had a question from somebody on Twitter here,
sure,
which says he basically wants to know your thoughts, kind of ties into what you were just talking about. With all of the high-tech cameras and phones, why aren't photos of these objects, I guess he's talking UFOs in general, of better quality? Now, you've noted, and I'll let you tell the story, your first experience seeing these lights, I mean, you were not expecting to see these lights necessarily. You were unprepared, I believe you said.
Yeah, completely. I mean, I whipped out my iPhone and started trying to take pictures of it, but trying to take pictures across a big, dark, almost Grand Canyon-like canyon, I wasn't seeing anything. But the stuff that showed up around us was really clear, really apparent. At some point, he's right. There will be someone that really captures this thing in complete high def.
You know, a couple of things. I just want everyone to go outside right now and like try and take a picture of the moon with your iPhone and let me know how that turns out. Or take a picture of anything in the dark with your iPhone. Or, you know, I don't do a lot of photography, but my wife does, and she's got a very nice camera. And let me tell you, trying to take photos in certain light, and it's very difficult. I mean, this is not, it's not like we all have cameras. We can just take these beautiful photographs of anything that surprises us. I mean, it's very difficult. And unfortunately, we're in a time where, yes, everyone has a photo, but guess what? Everybody knows how to use Photoshop. And so, when you talk about these clear photos, it's like, okay, you know, I just read about this UFO, the supposed rotating UFO over London. It's like, yeah, it looks real, but, you know, I don't know. Nowadays, I don't really trust any photographs.
Yeah, it's so hard to tell what's real and what's faked. And people are very good at Photoshop and very good at the manipulation of things. I would take a lie detector test and I would swear to the pictures that I took. I'd have no problem doing that.
Sure. Now, the film itself, this is your directorial debut, and you've worked with a lot of big names, actually. Adrian Brody, Forrest Whitaker. Was there a reason that you decided this film would be your debut?
Yeah. I mean, I had been on the other side of the camera. I was a producer before this. You know, I wrote this script with my best friend from childhood, Rob Lewis. And, you know, we came up with this concept, and I said, I could give this to someone else to do, but I don't think they're going to be as passionate about it as we are. Like, I know it. I mean, if I hand this off, I really want this movie to get out there the right way, and I need to do this. I need to step forward on it. Because it mattered to me. It mattered to me because my family is up there. It mattered to me because I think this is a story that needs to get out there. And, you know, I'm a huge science fiction nerd. So we got some amazing producers involved with this film. Lawrence Bender, who did every Quentin Tarantino film from Pulp Fiction to Kill Bill to Inglourious Basterds. And I started with Reservoir Dogs with him. I was incredibly fortunate to get him involved. And then we got Mike Fleiss, who did Hostel and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. and most famously created the TV show The Bachelor, of all things.
Wow.
Yeah, but I was so lucky and just so happy to have these guys involved. It was awesome.
Now, in looking at the finished product, I mean, I don't want, I've never asked this question, but I like to ask it anyway.
Sure.
What do you really love about it? And when you look at the finished product, what do you think, you know, if I had a little more time or if I had a little more this or that, I would have changed this? Or is there anything?
You know what? I never feel finished with a product, anything. I mean, it's like a painting or something. You could paint it for the rest of your life and never finish it. So I will never feel like I finished a movie. I don't think. You know, I've gone through so many edits and so many changes and so many things we've tweaked on it. I think I got it to a point where other people are reacting terrifically to it. We've gotten some amazing reviews from the New York Times giving us a 5-star review to the Village Voice and just
New York Times gave you 5 stars?
Yeah.
Wow.
Nuts. I would not expect it because they tear people apart. And we got such good reviews. You know, we got some bad reviews too, but mainly from the bigger places we got good ones. And the fans have given us the best ones. You know, there's always those snarky kind of jerks.
I like the fans and all, but the New York Times 5-star, nothing tops that.
For the first movie I've directed, I'm just shocked.
Well, the question now is, it's tough to top that. It's all downhill from here.
Well, you know, this community that I'm, you know, that you guys are a part of, and that I feel like I'm a part of now, that's the most important thing. You know, as long as I'm accepted by the ufologist community and the, and I just did Above Top Secret, I didn't ask me anything. And the embrace I had was so overwhelming. And this matters to me more than anybody, you know, reviewing the movie on a
horror site. The critics are not paying your bills.
Well, I'm not making this movie for them. They're just a bunch of snarky jerks that sit in rooms and watch 1,000 movies and try to find stuff to poke holes in. I'm a fan. I go and watch everything, and I love movies. That's why I do this, because it's truly a passion for me.
Now, I want just very quickly to, I've not read the New York Times review, but what did they love about the film? And just for fun, what were some of the things that some of these smaller sites were critical of?
You know, it mainly became the found footage things that people were critical of. If people were predisposed to not like a found footage film,
I see.
That usually was what the trigger was. The New York Times said it was like an uncommon take on both alien abduction and that it was like a fast-paced thrill ride. That was some of the quotes from it. But that was cool. I mean, I was like just honored that would happen.
Is the issue that people have with found footage films just because there's a feeling that they've been done to death? Is that kind of the issue or what?
I think the issue with found footage is that nothing happens in them. You watch some of these things and nothing actually occurs. They might be sitting on like a static shot for like 20 minutes and you're like waiting for something to happen.
Sure.
I don't think we do that in this movie, and it's hard for me to like talk about it without sounding like I don't want to toot my own horn at all.
But, you should. That's what you're on the show for.
It's just not in my nature, man. It's hard to do that. I mean, I loved making this film because I didn't want to not, I wanted to show the aliens. I wanted to show things actually happening in it and create a feeling of suspense and terror that these people do go through and try to be real to the subject. And I think we captured that.
Now, I've worked on some films, very small films, but things are very different now than they were even like, you know, a couple of decades ago. I mean, just with what you can do with digital cameras and, I mean, the budget for a film, just going from film to video, I mean, you can really slash a budget. I mean, tell us a little bit about the process of just putting this film together. I mean, did you have, I don't know if you want to talk about the budget or anything like that, but how was it in terms of, did you feel like you had enough? Did you have more than enough? I mean, is it looking like this is going to easily be a lucrative film for you in the sense that well above what you put into it, you're going to make when it comes to... Is it a success?
It is. It's a huge success. And, I mean, we're making, like, because we're at the top of the charts on, like, everything right now, we're outselling, like, Paranormal Activity. It's incredible what's happened with it. Now, we made the movie for a very minuscule budget. We had no money to do CG. It was my friends and family who financed it. So it was on a shoestring budget. We did it out of pocket. I put my own money into it. And we kind of cobbled it all together and made it work. But, you know, we had to do things like no without CG. So there's a shot in the movie where, and I'm not going to ruin anything by this, but because you'll find it interesting, I hope. But there's a shot in the film where there's an actual shot where they get sucked up into space. And this is based on a true story. So they get sucked up into space. And what we did was we launched a weather balloon into low Earth orbit with a camera tied to it. So we actually
really?
Get pictures. Yeah. So wow. We actually get real footage of space. The curvature of the Earth, the sun coming over the horizon there, and big lens flare. It's awesome. And then the camera, the balloon explodes because of pressure. It's too high. And the camera plummets back to Earth. It's probably 150,000 feet, and it explodes and comes barreling back to Earth and slams into the ground. And that's all real.
Wow. Would it not have been cheaper to do CGI?
I mean, for, you know, $400, $500, you get that shot. It's CGI, it probably would have been, you know, the budget of my entire film.
It's pretty impressive that you could put something into a near-Earth orbit for $500. I don't know if I'm comforted by that or what.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised we could do it. It's just like that guy jumping out of that parachute for that Red Bull stunt, that Baumgartner guy.
Yeah.
It's just like that. I mean, we went to the same altitudes that he was at.
It's a very beautifully shot movie. I mean, you have a lot of, I mean, maybe I'm out of my mind, but it does seem that you've got a lot of very extended shots. How exactly did you go about putting it together in terms of, I mean, I haven't gone through and like, you know, timed how long you had a continuous shot here, but was the idea kind of to do more long continuous shots to try to make it seem more like a home movie?
Yeah. I mean, almost most of the big shots are long and continuous. When the camera is turned off, like we show it turned off. Other than that, we connected everything together. We had to. That's the way you make it seem authentic.
Yeah.
And we didn't stick to the script whatsoever. I'd say 90% of what's on screen is completely ad-lib, off the cuff, just as a testament to our actors being really, really versatile.
So you wrote a script, and they 10% of it ended up on screen.
Yeah, you know, as long as we got from point A to point B in that specific scene, I let the actors be themselves, be human beings instead of robots to what they had to read.
Now, was that difficult at first for you as a director in the sense that I presume you spent a lot of time on this script? You get started, nobody's going by the script. I mean, was it immediately apparent that it was superior to what you had written? Or at the beginning, was it kind of like, man, guys, come on, let's stick to the script. And then after a while, you realized it was better.
I went into this knowing we were going to do that. because I had studied guys like Woody Allen. And Woody Allen, his scripts might be written out completely, but he lets the actors just say what they're going to say. And I really like took that to heart. And that's what makes it, that's what makes his movies feel like real conversations with people. And that's what I was trying to emulate.
All right. I just, I fast forwarded to the near Earth orbit after you explained it to me that it was real. It's, that's awesome. $500
behind the scenes of it too. If you want to check it out on my own personal website, I put it up. It's MattyBeckerman.com, and it's right on that main front page.
That seems like a fun $500 investment.
It was awesome.
Did you have to contact?
We actually lost the first two balloons that we launched.
And so they could be anywhere, right? They could be in my backyard right now. I mean, do you
we
have to?
We had GPS coordinates. We last saw them in the Great Smoky Mountains National Forest in Tennessee.
Oh, man. Someone's going to stumble upon that and think it's from outer space, which it is now.
Yeah, it really is. And that's a space camera. And if they find it, I was offering a $1,000 reward.
Wow. Now, I just keep I keep rewinding it to watch it again. Explain the process of, I mean, do you have to contact the FAA? What goes into sending a balloon with a space camera into orbit? It seems like somebody would want to say, now, hold on a second.
Our director of photography had done this. He had a viral hit. And he called it the Brooklyn Space Project. So he launched this thing from a park in Brooklyn, and he was the first person to do it. And since then, like, Citibank had copied him, and, like, all these people are copying him. But, you know, he had done it. He had practiced doing it. I had no idea that he had done it. I didn't know this about him when I first, like, hired him. And we get on set, and I had this scene written into the script. And he says to me, okay, we can do that. And I show up on set, and he's got this giant weather balloon. I'm like, what are we doing exactly? And he explains the whole thing to me. And I said, I thought you were kidding. he's amazing. Luke Geisbühler, terrific. I mean, he also did Borat and Bruno.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now I as I watch it for about the ninth time, it goes by fairly quickly, obviously, because it would be a while to show the entire ascent.
Yeah,
into
took 2 hours.
It's you know, it's the third disc in the set or something like that. But is it you ever look back at it and go, man, I wish I would have shown 30 seconds of that?
I did a longer cut where it really does show more of it. But the pace was not fast enough. I mean, I wanted to show a much longer sequence of it.
Yeah.
Because it was so much work. But at the end of the day, you have to edit yourself, and you have to say what's going to make the movie better versus what's going to make my feelings better. You know?
Sure, sure. Will here on Twitter, by the way, if you want to send questions in for Matty Beckerman, the hashtag is DMRadioNet. You can send them to me, at Brian Alvarez. He says, and of course, this will be a very easy question for you to answer, I'm sure. Where do you think your film ranks among other alien-related films? And if you don't want to rank your own film, tell us a little bit about some of the other alien-related films that you have seen that you have really enjoyed.
Oh, I have a top 10 list for sure. I mean, I definitely can't rank my own film. It's too hard for me to do that. But, you know, the top, the number one for me is Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Awesome movie.
Yeah, I mean, I keep telling this to people. I said, I've watched that film 300 plus times, and it's Spielberg at his absolute finest. And there's a couple things in my film that you'll notice that kind of, you know, are an homage to him. There's a banjo sequence where that Riley just walks up to this banjo that's sitting in this cabin, and he kind of strums the notes on it, and it's a little da 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 da. I mean, mm-hmm. It's not the exact notes, so don't sue me, please, Spielberg. but it's a little like, you know, a little nod.
It is a, if you are a younger listener and you've never seen Close Encounter of the Third Kind, and you're listening to this show, I don't know what to tell you, but you need to seek that film out. It is an amazing, God, I love that. I love that movie as well. And, you know, where do you rank Signs?
You know, it's a little bit lower on my list.
Is it out of the top 10?
No, it's in my top 10.
Okay.
Sure. It's in my top 5. But it's probably, you know, number 4. Just because that it's a little hokey at the end, but there are some moments in that film that make you jump clear out of your seat.
Yes.
And I love those moments so much that it makes up for anything else in that film.
That film does such an awesome job making you, you know you're watching a movie, you know it's not real, you know this is not, you're not going to see an alien, and you've seen a million of them in your lifetime on film anyway, but somehow they build this up so much that when they have, I don't even remember the exact scene, but it's like a shot.
I remember exactly.
It's on television, right? And you just see an alien for like a split second walk across the screen.
Yeah, it's in Mexico at this birthday party.
Yes.
And the thing walks across the screen for a moment. It's a handheld video camera. Supposed to be a home video. And you see this thing. And I had somebody with me, a friend of mine, and she grabbed my arm and scratched a top layer of skin off of me when that happened.
Yeah.
And I think the entire movie theater did.
I remember I was watching a theater with, like, my buddy, and, you know, he's big, strong guy or whatever, and we're trying to be, you know, cool about all of this, and we're just watching it, and that thing goes across, and we're like, oh, my God, there it was. Yeah. Scared the hell out of us.
And I think we have some of those types of scares in this film. Like, I wanted those to be in there. And I think we kind of captured that. But then...
You got a creepy-looking alien. You got a creepy-looking creature there.
Yeah, and that's what we were aiming. We were trying to make it authentic to what people really see and kind of keep it the classic gray look. And then, of course, my number 2 on my list is Fire in the Sky.
Yes, very good.
Yeah, you got to go there. My editor, actually, he was the editor of Fire in the Sky.
Really?
And I'm currently staring at one of the alien suit heads from the actual film.
How about that? Now, you mentioned you based it on the classic gray, but I mean, did you sketch this out yourself how did this creature come about?
Well, Rob Lewis, who's the writer, is also a really talented artist, comic book design and all types of amazing stuff he does. So we've been best friends since we were little kids, so we had always had these ideas. And he and I sketched this out, and then we brought it to the Kyoto brothers, who created a workable suit that someone could wear with a remote control for the face, where the eyes could blink and the mouth could move, and the entire face is active.
Now, the film itself is available in a lot of different places if you want to check it out. iTunes, Amazon Instant Video, Google Play, Xbox Video, Sony Entertainment Network. This all up at alienabductionfilm.com. Any other outlets that are available to check it out? And as far as films, I know, or theaters, you've got a good probably 24 and more to come. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much further it'll end up expanding. I'm having like a power out issue here.
Oh, man.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but it's starting.
Whoa. I seriously, my entire room that I'm in, the lights just got really bright. Oh, and they just dimmed down again. Totally freaky.
Well, we're going to stay live.
Yeah, I can't believe that just happened. That was insane.
Has that ever happened before?
No.
I'll stay on the phone then.
Hey. Yeah, yeah.
I'll stay on the phone here.
What that was. That, I mean, the hairs in the back of my arms are sticking straight up right now.
Wow.
Whoa, that was insane.
Well, hey, when
did
we're
you hear it?
I did. Actually, you know what? Your audio got really quiet for a second, but I noticed that you were horribly distracted for a moment there. Now I know what happened.
Whoa. I don't even remember what I was talking about.
Oh, we were talking about theaters. We'll go back to that later. Now I got to go back to your power spike. Was there...
I mean, maybe it's just the air conditioning in the area. It's awfully hot out here in L.A. And
all the air conditioning in the entire town turned on at the same time? I guess it's possible. I don't know. My lights flicker when the air...
It wasn't that. The power actually surged and all the lights went really bright in my office here, in my house.
Wow.
It, like, lit up. All right, well...
Thank God it didn't travel through the phone line here and knock me out.
Yeah. Maybe it's the aliens are telling me to stop talking about them.
All right, now let's talk about them some more. So when you saw these lights, when you had your experience, since we're on the subject of strange things happening, was there anything else strange going on? I mean, are there reports out there of, you know, I saw them, my car stalled, anything like that, or no?
Yeah, so the opening of the film, I interview this woman, and I haven't told you this story yet, have I?
No.
I haven't. So, okay, so she goes out, she sees the lights with her family. She comes back home, and she walks in her front door, and she goes into her bedroom, and she's immediately sucked straight up against the ceiling of her bedroom. She wakes up in her bed, and her husband jumps out of bed next door and says, "Oh, my God, I just had the worst nightmare. I was sucked up against the ceiling of the house."
So his wife is still against the ceiling when he's saying this?
No.
Okay.
It had already ended. They were both in bed. They both woke up in bed next to each other.
I see.
"Oh, my God. We both have the same horrible dream."
Okay.
"Nightmare." The next thing that happens is the freakiest part. So their daughter comes running in the room and says, "Mom, Dad, where have you been for the last day and a half? We've been looking everywhere for you."
So they had been gone. I'm trying to put my mind around this. So they just were not. So... Is the idea that they had been removed from the house, or that they were on the ceiling for 2 days?
No, they had been removed from the house.
Just completely removed. And I guess in their brain, their dream was that they'd been sucked up to the ceiling.
Well, they started getting sucked up to the ceiling, and then they woke up in their beds.
I see.
And that was, and then the loss of time.
There seems to be a lot of time issues in this area.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of the alien abduction lore, is the time missing.
So you did not experience anything like this?
Not personally. Like, I didn't, nothing like that actually happened to me.
Sure.
Other than the pictures that I took right at the Brown Mountain Lights, which was really significant. That happening to me was enough to say, "Oh my God, this is completely real."
Now, are there any other phenomenon that you are really into, that you've really investigated, that you're thinking maybe one of these days this could be the basis of a future project?
Yeah, and it's a lesser-known side of the alien ufology theories, which is, you know, the regression, hypnotic regression that people are doing now, where they are connecting beyond past lives, beyond their higher self, and they're actually connecting to what they call star seeds. I don't know if you're familiar with any of this.
Tell me more.
So there's a group of people who claim they're star seeds, who are implants here from other planets, and they've experienced if you believe in reincarnation and you believe in other planets having intelligent life, then it's possible that you have lived other lifetimes on other planets.
I see. So you're reincarnated not only from...
from other planets.
Yes, you're coming back and you had been on another planet.
Yeah.
Which I guess when you really think about reincarnation, I mean, if there is life on a number of other planets in the solar system, why would you, or not just the entire universe, why would you necessarily reincarnate in the same, not just like the same planet, but often it's like the same city.
Yeah, or the same creature. You could end up being reincarnated as a whale or a dolphin or like a spider. You know, you could end up in any situation. And who's to say, let's just talk about the universe for a moment, because I love talking about this. So there's a planet that was found like 2 weeks ago in a habitable zone.
Yes.
With liquid water that is Earth-like.
Yes.
And it's the first one we've kind of confirmed is an actual planet where life could exist. And now, you know, billions and billions, if not trillions of planets out there and suns orbiting those suns are, habitable zone planets. For us to think that the Earth is the only place where life could exist in the entire galaxy is just arrogant. So you have to think about that first. And now, if you have faith in God or whatever you want to call it, maybe an energy source or a higher self, and you think about that, if you have a soul, and that soul goes wherever it's going to go, to a higher place or heaven or whatever, who's to say that there aren't souls that are the same on other planets, that these creatures also have souls, and that those souls don't cohabitate and aren't cross-pollinized when you do become reincarnated. That's the theory.
Now, have you begun any sort of investigation into this, in the sense that have you done any interviews with people? Have you done sort of pre-screening of individuals you want to interview for a future project?
Yeah, I've gone beyond that.
Oh, really?
I was regressed myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
and,
about a month ago.
And what, are you at liberty to discuss what you discovered?
You know, it was a mind-blowing, opening, incredible experience. And parts of it I'm still not okay with. Of discussing yet, and maybe I will be.
In the sense of it was maybe situations in a past life that you would not be proud of, or something else?
No, it wasn't that. It was the fact that I had hit this higher level, and there was a voice that was speaking through me that was not my own. And it freaked me out a
little. In the middle of the regression, a voice began speaking out of you?
It was... Oh, man, I can't believe I'm even getting into this. But
you brought it up. I want to hear it now.
No, it's late night. I guess it's appropriate. I did bring it up, didn't I?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I was regressed, and I went from past life to past life. And part of the research is, like any movie, I think it's your obligation, if you're going to do something like this, to really experience it and not to just half-ass it and phone it in. So I'm walking the walk and talking the talk.
Now, are your own experiences presumably potentially going to be in this? What are we talking about here as far as, is this project in the works right now?
Yeah, this is something I'm actively writing.
Okay. All right. And is this going to be similar to Alien Abduction, or will this be more a straight documentary?
No, it's going to be a feature, a full feature.
A full feature.
Yeah.
Found footage or otherwise?
No, like just full-on theatrical movie.
Full-on theatrical movie.
Yeah.
So obviously...
So there's two types of aliens, right? There's the benevolent and the malevolent.
Sure.
And, you know, I've already captured the malevolent side with Alien Abduction. And I think that's just like different countries have different expectations of what they're going to do. Like, you know, Kim Jong-il and North Korea have an agenda that's different than Bhutan or the United States. Different alien races also have different agendas on this planet. And some are good and some are bad. And I think the hypnosis side of things really tap into the more benevolent side of extraterrestrial life. And I'd like to explore that. And I don't think it has been really done before.
Now, are you at liberty to discuss whether in a past life you were earthbound or otherwise?
You know, I started tapping into that and I got freaked out and kind of stopped it a little bit.
But now, are you planning to
go back,
resume this at some point?
Yeah, I'm going to resume it for sure.
Okay.
I'm going to go back into it. And this time I might actually videotape it. And I recorded the first one and it's pretty intense.
Can you listen to the whole thing back or no?
Yeah, I listened to it for sure. And you know, it's pretty, you know, I've gone to like a medium before that my mom has like forced me to go to with her. And, you know, I never really believe all that stuff. And I sat down with this medium and things are coming out of her mouth that sound crazy, but it is appropriate for me, right? It's one thing going to some medium and hearing it from them. It's another thing when it comes out of your own mouth in someone else's voice.
So that brings us to a Ouija board of all things. Exactly. If I were messing around with a Ouija board and it started spelling out some weird stuff, is this all the same phenomenon or is this something completely different?
I think it's different.
Think it's different?
Yeah, it's different. You know, there's a spiritual level within yourself, and there is no dark like force to it. There's no demonic side to it within you.
Now, some would argue that is a demonic entity trying to convince you of that. And in fact,
yeah, right.
In fact, you're messing around with the wrong sort of thing here.
Yeah, some people would go there, wouldn't they?
They don't buy that?
I don't. I think we are more than this body that we're in. We are more than this machine that we live in. And it's clear and more evident to me every day.
Now, people will often say, I'm sure I've said this because I've got three cats that are spoiled absolutely rotten. Someday I hope I come back as one of my cats or a cat. And you mentioned that, you know, perhaps past life is not necessarily you coming back and you were a human before. Maybe you were another animal. Have you, in talking to individuals, have you spoken to people who in their past life, they may have been an animal?
No, I haven't gotten that yet.
Not yet. All have been humans.
So far.
I'd be interesting. Yeah. I'd be interested to see if because, you know, I don't know.
No, I'm wrong.
Oh, really?
I am wrong. I'm completely wrong, and I can't believe I was wrong. Because a very close friend of mine, I'm not going to talk too much about it, but was an actual panther.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? And I mean, did you get a lot of good information about it from this person?
Yeah, completely.
Fascinating. Yeah.
So I'll just tell you one small thing that happened to me.
All right.
So for just about my entire life, from when I was a little kid, I would get these crazy neck spasms, and I had this pain that persisted throughout my life. Mm-hmm. I've gotten MRIs on it. I've gone to doctor after doctor, chiropractor after chiropractor, acupuncture, just trying to find some relief to this pain. And, you know, I had gone to pills at some point, you know, to try to do something about it. Nothing really helped it. And no doctor could tell me what the heck it was. and I did this regression. And one of the first lives I went back to, I opened my eyes, and I have an arrow sticking out of my neck, and I'm bleeding out of it.
You had been shot.
I had been shot with an arrow. I was on a battlefield, and I was dying.
Wow.
And I was able to energetically kind of heal myself in that state. And since that happened, I have not had that pain. It's the first time in my life I haven't had it.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, do we have a, since we're on the topic, do we have a set number of lives? Is it, I guess, I believe the Buddhist theory would be that you return and you attempt each time to gain a new level of enlightenment. And eventually you achieve that, and then you do not reincarnate. I may have that completely screwed up. I apologize if I do.
I think that's the Buddhist side of things, where you reach like a nirvana state.
Sure, but right. You know, is that sort of the impression that you have gotten, or do we just keep coming back into eternity until there is nothing more to come back to?
I think, you know, we experience this plane, this physical existence, as many times as we need to in order to learn whatever we need to, you know, evolve and to change our concept of who we are, and get past things in life.
You know, I once read something. I don't even remember where it was, in the weirdest book. And it was an explanation, because, you know, people will often ask, why does God allow bad things to happen to good people?
Right.
And I was reading this book, and this guy's theory, which kind of sort of blew my mind, was that God, if there is a God, the God that we know from whatever, is supposed to be this all-knowing being, correct?
Correct.
And so
correct.
The theory was that everything that everyone in this world experiences, God would experience as well. And so how would God know what it's like to, for example, be eaten by a whale? Unless you, someone, somewhere, has to be eaten by a whale. Does it make sense? So every good and horrible thing that could possibly happen to anybody, anywhere, must happen so that God can understand what this is. And I was like, that is quite a theory. That is a fascinating theory.
That's very, I've never thought of it that way at all.
And I don't know, I just, when you were talking about this coming back, you know, multiple times and, it just sort of made me think about that, but I don't know. I just thought that was very interesting. So
you know,
that's
I always look at it, and I've been told this, that you experience bad things in your life in order to get you around something that's going to end up then being fruitful. And there's a reason why you've stepped into the bad path, and it's to show you the good. If there's no dark, you wouldn't understand what light was.
So do you get like let's say that I get hit by...
I didn't mean to get all philosophical here.
No, hey, we're on a
really,
roll.
Really getting into my next project, which is going to be focused on past life regression that leads into extraterrestrial experience.
It's late night. We're going to just keep going here for a moment, if you got a couple more minutes here.
Yeah, let's do it, man. I'm happy.
Now I got questions. So
sure. If
I were hit by a car tomorrow... And I am going to come back. Is it a brand new clean slate? I've learned nothing from my previous lives. Nothing carries over. We've obviously, you know, you always read an article about such and such a child remembers this from a past life. I mean, what do you make of these stories? And is it a clean slate?
No, it's not a clean slate. You constantly repeat things you haven't learned.
I see.
It repeats itself over and over again in your life. And the people that surround you have lived with you and been part of your life, whether it's your mother, your father, your wife, your brother, your sister. All these people do travel from lifetime to lifetime with you and are kind of your group of companions throughout this process. And someone might be your father in one life and your brother in another. It just alters the way. And if you have unfinished business with those people, those same issues will continue to resonate.
I have absolutely no memories whatsoever of any past life, consciously at least. But some people, some people say they do. Is there, do you feel that there is a reason that some people seem to have these, and usually, I mean, to be fair, I mean, usually when you hear these stories, it's like the child has these recollections up until age 4 or 5, and then it just kind of, you know, flitters away into the ether and they forget it, and their parents remind them years later. Is that kind of the impression you got? Why do some people remember and some people do not?
You know, I never had any recollections of any past lives, and certainly the ones I visited when I did this hypnotic regression weren't something I thought. But if you're looking at history and you feel sort of a connection to a place and you don't understand why, you've never been there, you've never really had a reason to think about it, and you're just fascinated with it, there may be a different, deeper connection for you. And I can't say that that's exactly what, you know, life you're living, and it was a past life. But it's certainly a possibility that, you know, you might have experienced that before.
Is
like deja vu.
Sure, yeah. Deja vu. It does seem sort of a little bit unfair that you've got to learn a lesson, but you don't remember anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's on a soul level.
It's got to be a feeling.
Different. Yeah, it just, you know, you go through hardship, you go through pain, and those things kind of guide you and bring you to where, what path you're supposed to be on.
Is there I mean, from people that you've talked to, I mean, is there an average, I don't know what other way to put it, is there an average turnaround time? I mean, if I were hit by a car tomorrow, I mean, should I expect that within 9 months I will be born again, or would it be a longer period in between, or is there even a number?
There is no number.
No number?
There's no set thing. It's where you kind of choose your parents, you choose where you want to go into, and you make an active choice of this is the life I want to try to lead. And up until age 13, it's out of your control. It's the higher self's control of who you are. After that age, you're able to kind of free will yourself around.
Why 13? Is it just that's what it is?
I don't know. It's just what I was told.
Now, what do you make, since we're on the topic of, for example, ghosts?
I definitely think that ghosts are legitimate.
Spirits or otherwise?
Yeah, spirits. I mean, I'm sure there's some demonology that really exists as well. I try not to focus on that because it freaks me out. But you know, I definitely think that there's ghosts exist, and they definitely are souls that maybe are trapped here.
So that was my next question, souls that are trapped here.
I don't even know if they're trapped here or they're just coming to visit, coming to say hi.
Sure. Well, actually, it's a very...
I lost my grandfather this past year, and, you know, every now and then I like to think that he's here with me.
Sure. But it is a very different, it's two very different things. I mean, if you're trapped here, the question would be, what causes, I mean, I would not want to be trapped here if I passed away. If I had the option, I would not want to be trapped here, stuck in a house, you know, scaring people. From what you've investigated, I mean, if someone is trapped here, I mean, is there a way out, or are you trapped here forever?
Well, I'll tell you just a personal experience. So one of my best friends as a kid OD'd and died. And I went to one of those, kind of John Edwards type, like cold readers, where a giant room of people. And I was in this whole group, and the lady singles me out. It's probably like 150 people there, and my wife had dragged me to it. And I'm always like, ugh, these stupid things. So she looks at me and she says, there is a boy your age covered in blood standing behind you.
What?
this is what she says to me. And if I hadn't have heard that from three other psychics, I wouldn't have paid much attention to it. And I had heard this before, and I knew exactly who it was, and I knew exactly what it was. And so I went to this, are you familiar with Qigong?
I don't think so.
It's this ancient Chinese, it's almost like Kung Fu.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just an amazing thing. So I went to this Qigong master, who I was recommended to go see from a friend, and knows nothing about me, knows nothing. And this is years later. And I'm sitting down with her, and she says, "You have someone who will not leave you. He's covered in blood, and he's standing behind you." And, you know, this is the fourth time now I've heard this. I'm like, oh, my God. And she says to me, "He's causing havoc in your life, and he refuses to go. And we need to remove him right now." And apparently what she did was a ritual that allowed him to ascend and to leave. And, you know, maybe it was mental for me, but I definitely felt different.
So you did have issues prior that cleared up after?
Yeah, I did. Whether it was insecurity or anxiety or, like, something that would stop me from doing certain things in my life. That stopped. It changed.
Why do you think he was there?
He was my best friend growing up as a kid, and we did everything together. And, you know, he's not the best person, you know, kind of rough around the edges, and so was I. Growing up in New Jersey and kind of I was the only Jewish kid in, like, an Italian and Irish neighborhood. And we were, you know, we were rough kids. I mean, we really were. And, you know, my best friends were in jail or dead, and he's one of them.
So
I'm kind of the only one to make it out of that neighborhood.
Did you kind of feel that he wasn't sticking around to so much make your life difficult? He just didn't want to leave?
No, I only felt it because these people had told me. Other than that, I had no feeling that he was there. It was only third party people who had told me that this was actually happening to me. But when this Qigong master actually removed this, it did feel like a weight had been lifting off. And maybe it's because I was so upset that my best friend from a little kid had passed away that I was carrying it with me.
Yeah.
And that could be, you know, what caused me to kind of hold on to him. And maybe her doing that ritual allowed me to personally let go.
Now, why did you go to the Qigong master?
My wife was super into it. This is what happens. Oh, my God, it's so funny. She'll kill me for telling you this, though. But whatever, she's asleep. She loves going to this stuff, and I'm so not into it. But I know from what I sound like I am, but I am only recently, because things have shown me after making this film. Honestly, I've opened up a lot. My skepticism has waned. So Kathy, my wife, she brought me down to this woman because she wanted to go. It was like 8 o'clock in the morning, and it's like 2 hours from my house, so I did not want to go. And she dragged me because she didn't want to go alone. She sits down, and the woman says, "You're fine. Nothing's wrong with you."
But that was highly disappointing for her.
It was totally disappointing. She's like, "I drove all the way down here. This is bull. Come on. You know, give me something." And then I sit down there, and she's like, ding, 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 like all these things. And Kathy gets pissed off with me. She says, you know, I'm the one who wants to explore this stuff. How come it keeps happening to you? I'm like, honey, I'm not asking for it.
Wow. I've never heard of going to try to get some sort of reading and just being told, nope, nothing there.
Yeah. Yeah. Funny.
Now,
my wife is so supportive. She's like the best person ever.
I was going to ask about your wife. I mean, she is she kind of, where does her skepticism lie with all of this?
She was always more open than I was. Always kind of more accepting of what could be around us. And me, I was always a little bit more freaked out. And I'm a guy, you know. I'm like, yeah, screw that.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that your skepticism had waned.
It's gone now. My skepticism is out the door.
Out the door. Since making the movie, I mean, what was it, the process of making the movie? Was it, I mean, what was it that sent it out the window about all of this?
It was this regression I did.
Just the regression. Honestly.
Yeah, and I only did that because I was researching after making Alien Abduction, seeing the Brown Mountain Lights, like actually witnessing something like that incredible. I said to myself, finally, I physically saw this. It wasn't someone else telling me, oh, this exists, or someone else saying, oh, you got to check this out. No, it was with my own eyes. I saw something that I could not explain. And I think it was the first time I had seen something like that, that really changed my outlook. That seeing that was mind opening.
Now we are
up until that point, I explored these types of things really from more of a clinical standpoint.
Sure,
but having not ever experienced anything paranormal.
So typically, so it's what typically happens to a person. You are skeptical until it happens to you.
So you could see it with your own eyes.
Sure.
I understand a healthy skepticism because that was me. But since experiencing that, man, I'm a different person.
Now, we're running low on time here. I just want to ask a couple of quick questions, and we'll go to a lot of plugs. I know we got a lot of people listening right now still here at 1 a.m., Pacific on a Friday night.
I thought I would scare everyone off.
No, more and more are listening as we go on here. So I want to make sure we get a chance to plug it. But I wanted to just ask you, I mean, how closely do you follow the whole UFO scene? I mean, is it something that kind of you follow on a daily basis? Do you look at stuff like, you know, what's going on with the Mars rover? This, you know, there was like a weird light that it took a photograph.
Yeah, that light that's there. I'm pretty much tapped into everything.
All right, so you're into this.
Yeah.
What's the best stuff nowadays? What is the stuff that's really caught your eye? I mean, obviously,
Kepler.
Oh
yeah, for sure. I mean, Kepler discovering planets that are inhabitable Earth-like, you know, zones. That is awesome.
Do you believe that within the next, let's say, 10 years, we will have discovered life elsewhere in this universe? Officially.
I think so.
Officially.
I think so.
You think so?
Maybe disclosure could happen at some point.
Do you think that that's a possibility? Like, do you really think that's a possibility?
Yes and no. I think it will be disclosure forced, where someone internal, like Snowden or Julian Assange, will spill the beans and just leak everything.
Are you surprised with the lack of UFO documentation in what was released by Snowden?
He didn't really release any UFO or any real documentation, unless I'm mistaken. But really, the WikiLeaks, Bradley Manning stuff,
sure,
that I was surprised did not. But mainly what the WikiLeaks stuff was just a bunch of communications between the U.S. government and our foreign ambassadors' offices spying on other countries.
Sure.
You know, that was the main body of what that was. And I really equate that to what happened in the Middle East this year, a couple years ago. Sorry, the entire Arab Spring came from instability that WikiLeaks caused.
Yeah. I want to plug everything here. I we're out of time. I would love to have you back on someday. Hopefully you'll come back on around the time that your next project really gets going, because a lot of stuff to talk about there. The film, the main film that we started talking about before segueing into 8 million different topics, is Alien Abduction. It is in theaters and on iTunes right now. You can download it on iTunes, Amazon Instant Video, Google Play, Xbox Video, Sony Entertainment Network. If you go to alienabductionfilm.com, there is a list of theaters and opening dates. The last date actually is May 2nd was the most recent. Portland, Oregon, Clinton Street Theater. That's right. And perhaps more to come as well, but I want to give you a chance to get all your social media stuff out there, your own personal website, and whatever else you'd like to plug on this program.
Yeah, MattyBeckerman.com is my own personal website. Please visit me there. Reach out. I'm happy to talk to you. Facebook, we have Alien Abduction Film 2014 is our Facebook page. We've got a ton of people now liking us there. We're building a good Twitter following and a good Instagram following. You can find all those links up on our site, alienabductionfilm.com, including a link to my site.
That's right. Matty Beckerman, Alien Abduction is the film. And you could check all of this out at alienabductionfilm.com, including a link, as noted, to MattyBeckerman.com, which is listed right here as the director's blog. And Matty, I want to thank you so much for doing the show today. It was an awesome show. Excellent film, as noted, 5 stars in the New York Times, and just great work. So thanks again so much, and hope to have you back on again someday.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much, and I will be in touch. And of course, everybody, we are getting ready to wrap this program up. I want to thank all of you for listening. I have gotten the listening numbers here tonight, and a lot of you staying up until 1 o'clock a.m. Pacific, 4 a.m. Eastern, listening to the show. I very much appreciate it. And of course, you know where to go. The main websites, couple of plugs here. AfterDarkRadioShow.com. You can check out, that is my personal website. This show, if you missed any of it, is going to be up in about 15 minutes at AfterDarkRadioShow.com as a free download. If you're listening right now live, you should probably run up there right now and grab the Lawrence Krauss interview from last week, A Universe from Nothing, talking about his book. It's up there right now. It's going to be up there for about 15 minutes until I replace it with this show. So make sure you head up there and check that out. An excellent show. And as noted, this show is going to be up as well. Make sure you check out After Dark Radio, AfterDarkRadioShow.com. Also, ArtBell.com is the main website for the Dark Matter Radio Network. ArtBell.com, a lot of great articles up there. All sorts of great stuff, including a link, of course, to what you are listening to right now, the Dark Matter Radio Network. It is airing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Lots of live shows, lots of replays. I believe this show will be replaying throughout the day tomorrow as well. And tomorrow, 5 o'clock p.m., Capricorn Radio, Dreamland Astronomy Cast, 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific, and The Secret Teachings at 9 o'clock p.m. You could check all of those out. We will be back live next Friday, as always, 11 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 2 a.m. Eastern. And again, for all of the latest on the Dark Matter Radio Network, check out artbell.com. So that is it from here, everybody. I want to thank you so much for listening. We'll talk to you again next week. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio Show. Talk to you again very soon.